Morning. Good to see all of you. Nice to see some faces back
who have been ill, and we welcome all those who are joining us live at home, and we hope that you are doing well or recovering if need be. I want to talk a little bit today about something that has bothered me a bit, especially recently. I don't know why more recently than any other time, but just noticing how much people mistreat each other. And I don't just mean disagree, but how that any kind of disagreement becomes some sort of, a decision that you must be evil. You must be horrible, because for somebody to have had that thought or that idea or that expression, you come from an evil place, where I and all of my tribe, we come from a place of light and goodness and wonderfulness. And that is just so wrong. We all come from a place of brokenness. We all come from a place where our tribe, whatever you might describe that as, has done terrible things, has been awful, has not always had the proper motivation or agenda. You know, it might be that your tribe might be a family member. It might be your nation. It might be your state. It might be, you know, whatever it might be. I mean, you watch the fans of two football teams go at it. And in America, it's not like Europe. This is not an American thing. I mean, we think, you know, fans might go at it in a football game here. In football in, Europe, which obviously played with a different ball and primarily with your feet. But their football is, there are riots that happen in their stadiums. That it is a dangerous place. This and it's all over one team versus another team. Now, I don't think it's about the teams. It really is about people. And we have there is something in people that seems to desire to define who are mine, who's on my side, and who is the others. And social media has exacerbated that, has made it just has ramped it up. It didn't change anything. It's just made it kind of like, you know, put it on steroids and beefed it up so that everybody wants to, you know, kind of define other people as good or bad, or on my side or not on my side. And for us as Christians, very often, religious people, not just Christians, but any religion you really want to look at, often will define themselves as who's in and who's out. As, well, then which one, just like the lawyer when Jesus talked about loving your neighbor as yourself, and he's like, well, yeah, but who's my neighbor? He's like, and the lawyer obviously was sitting there thinking, well, I love my neighbor as I define my neighbor. And Jesus went on to define a neighbor very differently than that lawyer would have expected. He would not have expected the Jews and the Gentiles. I mean, they disliked each other so much, they walked out of their way to not go by their town, even though it was the shortest path home. I mean, they went out of their way. They took extra time just to avoid them, wouldn't talk with them, wouldn't help them. And he gives the story of the Good Samaritan, a man of Samaria who helps a Jew who was hurting, who was in need. And he describes essentially your neighbor as being the person who's in need. But I want to ask yourself, can you name a single person around you who's not in need? There's no needs that you could help in any way. Really, there aren't any people around you. You don't know any people, and there aren't any people close to you. There aren't any neighbors near your house that you have not yet to meet. who don't have needs, who can't use help, because that's just not the way human beings exist. We are not wired that way to be a rock living on our own. And so, as servants of God, how we behave with other people is probably more important than the actual doctrines that often people argue over. Because if we sit and argue about certain teachings, and I would suggest to you that the reality is in most religions, just as Paul wrote that, you know, the fruit of the Spirit, these are things people don't argue about. I mean, nobody makes laws about it. You can't love people. You can't take care of people. You can't care and be concerned. And nobody makes laws like that. There's no country in the world that's ever made laws like that. Now, people might define what help is differently. They might define what love is differently. But people are all trying to kind of find those places where they find respect and kindness and love and goodness and care. And so if we as servants of God, if we claim to be servants of God who is holy, we can't act in a way that's very tribal and expect others then to accept the teachings or the doctrines that we might know or understand. And so, you know, it's like you can say you have the best laws that have ever existed, but if nobody practices them, what would they matter? In fact, years ago, it's been a long time since I had kind of read through just kind of quickly the Constitution that the Soviet Union had. And I had heard it argued that, and I read it kind of quickly because people had argued that, you know, boy, in terms of a constitution of rights, and it was fantastic. But they didn't actually live it. They didn't actually practice it. And so if it's not something that comes down into actually how we behave, and especially how we behave with one another, and not even those on our tribe, but especially those who we might think are different from us, how do we behave towards other people? Whether they have a different idea, a different culture, a different heritage, whatever it might be, if we can't treat people the way God describes for us, then the teachings and the doctrines will become meaningless and hollow and empty. And so how we treat each other and how we treat others says an awful lot about what we really are. And that's why I titled it, started with being. What kind of being are you? Are you a being that treats others well? Or are you a being who doesn't? What you believe and what you think and what you want and what you hope to do, those are all nice. But what do? Who are you in terms of what people can see? You know, all of us by ourselves, we know who we are more than other people know who we are, because there's all kinds of things going on within our brain that we understand, that we have experienced, that we have understood, that we feel, but other people cannot understand them. It's not even easy for us. Even if I were to take, you know, all day and try to explain to you my almost 60 years of life, what has happened to me from the time I was born till now, if I took 2 days, a week, do you think you'd still know me as much as I know me? No, and yet I still won't know me as well as God knows me. But I can't fully express to you all that I know about me, why I do things the way I do things, why I sometimes react the way I do to certain things. We had breakfast, Mike and I, this week, and earlier in the week, and we were talking, and I was somehow we got on the discussion of people who are charming. And I have a very charming father. My father was also an adulterer, and many times. My father was, a great salesman. And my brother, my older brother, who was quite charming as well. Girls all loved him. Younger brother, the girls all loved because of his beautiful eyes and wonderful curly hair. I have this real deep set distrust for people who are charming because of my brother and my father. Their charmingness is not real. When I see some people who are charming, I think they're probably not honest, that it is a facade, and that it's not real, that it is fake, because that's my experience. Now, I try to give people the benefit of doubt and say, well, maybe they're real, but I know I have that reaction. That's just my response. And I have gone out of my way in my life to try and not be charming. I have not tried to do things to be especially, ingratiating myself to others and be a charming kind of person. I don't know how we would all define that. But I don't want to be like my father and my brother. No. And I would think most of my family would say, I have succeeded in that. Now, you're laughing about the charming part. I don't know if they would say that or not. The reality is, I'm not like my brother and my father, and I'm a very different person, and that's for the better. And now that's not because I'm just a better human being, but because I chose and sought after godliness that they did not. Even though they had understood it and been taught it, they didn't seek it. They didn't follow after it. They didn't force themselves to try and be and adopt it, if that makes sense, to become that which God had said. And so being really a godly person, I think, matters a whole lot more about how we are treating others than it is about what we understand and what we know. Even when somebody first becomes a Christian, you know how many, in my estimation, there are probably a handful of things that they might not understand God thinks is sinful that they would think aren't sinful. Hope I said that the right way. But most people, when they become a Christian, probably know a whole bunch of stuff they're doing they shouldn't do. There's only a few things that they're kind of like, well, I thought that was okay. And that happens. And especially the more you grow and understand about God, you do learn more about what's good behavior, what's godly behavior, what's not. But 95, 99% of it, you already know. You already understood, that stealing from somebody wasn't good. You already knew hurting other people purposely, especially with a malevolence, and just kind of a selfishness wasn't good. There's all kinds of things when people become Christians. They don't have to I've got to really research it and find out, all the bad stuff I've been doing. No, you probably already know all the bad stuff you've been doing. There might be a few more things you can learn about trying to do good and practice good things. But more often than not, it's just, who are we? What do we display for other people? And so I want to look at two passages today that describe the idea, and really I'm talking about the character qualities that we want to define our behavior towards other people. So the first one is in 2 Timothy 2, 24 and 25. And in this whole section in the book, chapter 2 starts off with this idea. Well, I'm even going back to the beginning of the letter. Paul is writing to Timothy. This younger man whom he had taught and trained to go out and preach the gospel. And he talks to him in the beginning of the letter about, you need to guard what I have entrusted to you, or what God has entrusted with you. You need to guard yourself, the gospel. You need to be honest and true, but you have to also behave in a proper way. And he goes into chapter 2 talking about being a good soldier of Christ. You know, understanding what your purpose is, why God has called you to do this work, is very much like a soldier when they're called to go and fight for their country. Well, they leave aside all the stuff about, you know, trying to, you know, build a home and worrying about food, you know, because, you know, the king or the country, they feed you and they give you your clothes. And what do you do? Why do countries feed and clothe and house all their warriors? Because they don't want their warriors worried about any of those things. They want them focused on the battle. They can't do anything but focus on the battle, or they're not going to be good warriors. They can't be focused on what's at home, right? No, just what's ahead. And so that's what he tells Timothy. And he says, listen, you know, as in your work that God's called you to do, you need to focus on what your job is. And you need to leave aside all the other worldly stuff and focus on your purpose. Now, he comes in there towards the end of chapter 2, and he starts talking to him about being a worker, now using a little different kind of, you know, analogy. But now, instead of, he used the soldier and talked about things, now he's talking about being a worker whom your boss approves of, knowing that you're going to do your job, that you're going to do your job well to the very best you can do it. And there's no better thing for any of us in terms of of being a worker is when we have an employer or a boss in some way that completely trusts us to do our job. They know that we will do our job the best we can. That's trustworthiness, by the way. One of those other characteristics that I'm not going to go into today, but one that should define us if we really want to be godly. That others can trust us. We will do what we say we're going to do. We'll follow through. Even if they're not watching, we're going to be busy doing what we have been tasked with. And so when he talks about, in these passages, these two verses, he has just gotten through warning him about, don't get caught up in all of this kind of babbling and arguing and different things that go on. Sometimes people start arguing over, you know, words and other nuance or details, and it's not beneficial, it's not helpful. And so he says, starting verse 24, after telling him, really, you need to kind of flee your youthful passions, and you got to pursue faith, love, peace, along with, you know, this, all those who calling on the Lord. But he says in verse 24, the Lord's servant must not be quarrelsome, but kind to everyone. So, argumentative. I've actually really recently been considering, I might completely drop most all social media. I kind of still have it. I occasionally look at it. So if I don't look and I don't respond to stuff you post, don't be surprised. I'm guessing most of you who know me aren't surprised anyway now, because I don't hardly, if I do, I kind of glance at it occasionally. I'm sure I miss a lot of stuff people post. I don't get notifications from Facebook. I already turned that off a long time ago. I don't get notifications from. So if I don't go look at it, I won't know anything about it. But I'm really close to just kind of, I'm gonna cancel the account. I'm gonna excise them out. I don't want to see it. I don't even want it, because there's just so much arguing. Even in things that are supposed to be fun and happy, and one of the things that I'll go to occasionally when I'm looking is about, you know, Disney. It's kind of Disney related, fan groups. And even then, you're talking about, you know, going to Disneyland or Disney World, and they're just like, and they're arguing all the time. It's nonstop. So that they're constantly warning everybody, going to kick you off. I just don't need to hear it all the time. I don't like watching it. I don't like reading it. I skip through most of it. But I still, before I know to skip through it, I have to have read it. I had to see it. But, and so he's telling us, we should not be argumentative people with anybody. He said, everyone. Who's left out of that? Nobody. Don't be an arguer. And some of us maybe come by it naturally. Maybe some of us are good at it. I certainly have some teachers in school that would think I was a good arguer. And I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the debate, as long as it didn't get mean or what, you know. I liked kind of debating it. I liked debating stuff I didn't even agree with. I'd make arguments I didn't even agree with to teachers. I was just kind of that way. My teachers, you know, if you were talking to them, a lot of them would know that. But I'm not that way anymore. Haven't been that way a long time. You know, as a young person, that was me. And so, but I've realized how much it affects other people. How much other people are turned away and turned off by people just arguing. And what I mean arguing is that you're getting upset and angry and you're starting to kind of like dislike each other. I don't mean just disagreeing. Disagreeing's okay as long as we're not quarrelsome about it. As long as I don't have to choose sides. As long as I don't have to put you out and me in. Or vice versa. Quarrelsomeness. And this is one of those things that he's telling Timothy, you can't have any part in this. And so he says, you need to be kind. So even if you do disagree, I mean, why are you quarreling anyway? Because there's some disagreement, right? But even in the mix, even in the midst of disagreeing, can I be kind? Can I assume others have good intentions? Well, you would think by most disagreements you see, whether it's political or whether it's on social media, that immediately we assume when somebody disagrees, they're evil. They're hateful and they're hurtful. You know, I have been, so Facebook has me labeled as an ultra-conservative, right-wing Christian kind of person, even though I take all of those, I've kind of eliminated those from Facebook. I actually was a very liberal Democrat for a long time, even after I became a Christian. And so most people wouldn't know that about me. I'm not that liberal-minded politically, but I'm also not that political anymore. Politics interests me almost zero. My life has never been better or worse because of who is in office. I've thought it, you know, there are times I thought, you know, hey, life is over because somebody got elected. Life, you know, I've thought all that stuff, going all the way back to the 70s. It's all been wrong. I mean, no matter who is in president, good, bad, or indifferent, you know, the world kind of goes up and down. And, you know, there are good times and there are bad times, regardless of who's in charge. Now, that doesn't mean I don't think there aren't better ways to do things than other ways. I do. But I'm not looking for some kind of nirvana in this world. Anymore, at least. Probably was when I was younger. But the goal is to be kind and to say, hey, this person would want to do something different. Can I accept that they might want, having been a liberal Democrat, I know liberal Democrats. I know a lot of them. I also know how they think and why they think, and I know a lot of them believe it's the best way to police something for the benefit and good of mankind. I know a lot of them really honestly believe that. Good intentions. But, you know, you can have good intentions and still be wrong on both, on all sides. All of us can. We all need to accept that about us. We all can be wrong regardless of our intentions. We all can also be right and still handle it very badly. We can be completely right in a quarrel and still be quarrelsome. Right? This is one of the problems that, you know, I've dealt with essentially as a preacher in congregations for decades, is that very often people come and they want to argue some point with me or you know, maybe about the church or about Sunday something, and they might be right, but they're handling it really bad in such a way that they end up falling into temptation themselves and becoming quarrelsome and becoming kind of divisive in spite of being right. And so he tells them, and he says, after telling them to don't be quarrelsome, be kind to everybody. He then goes ahead to talk about being able to teach, and I'm just kind of ignoring that for a second because I want to focus on the other kind of character things here. And he says, patiently enduring evil. So this kind of goes into this idea of, you know, you've got opposition. Can you be patient with people who are attacking you, who are hurting you, who are coming at you? Can you be patient? That's not easy. Most of us aren't good at it. It's really clear on social media that most of us aren't good at it. I know a few people who actually are pretty good at it. They get into all kinds of, you know, divisive stuff online, on social media, and, you know, they'll post stuff that's really controversial and want to discuss it. And they'll be really good even when people are kind of like, you know, throwing stones at them, and they'll kind of respond really well and just kind of, you know, trying to take. I see like probably a couple of people I know who can do that. I don't know how their skin is so tough and all the people can just kind of rail at them so much and them not kind of just accept that and not personalize that and still just respond well. I can't do that. I know me. And so I'm not going to get started in that. Because my back going to get up and I'm going to want to start defending myself and it won't go well. So you have to, he says, be patient. Be patient with people who might hate you. That's not much different than praying for them, right? Like Jesus told us to do. He said also, patiently enduring evil, he said, correcting his opponents with gentleness. And so there are three things from this particular passage, three characteristics. One being kind. That needs to be a definition of who we are, right? Which is part of being, right? When you conjugate that verb to be, one of them is who we are. And being patient. And the third, being gentle. And this is a tough one. Some people might be naturally that way. Some people might not. But the goal is to learn how to respond with gentleness. Even when people are coming at you and opposing you in some way, can we be gentle with them? These are the things that God is asking of us. As his children, as his servants, I'd like you to be kind and patient and gentle. These are not about being right or wrong, right? God would rather us be right than wrong, but truth has to be spoken in love. And so all of being right has to be practiced. You can't be right on all of the ideas and not do these things and think God's okay with that. You can't understand everything perfectly and not be kind and patient and gentle and have God go, well, yeah, but you understand everything, right? So that's fine. No. It's not how God's going to react to us. In 1 Peter 3, chapter 8, or verse 8 through 15, and I'll go through this fairly quickly. It kind of highlights a few of the same things, but it has a few more. He says, starting in chapter 3 and verse 8, we should get back to the right passage. He says, finally, all of you, so first off, where that passage you could argue, well, that one was addressed to this preacher. Well, this was not addressed to the preacher. This was addressed to everybody, all of us. He says, finally, all of you have unity of mind. And that's kind of one we can kind of put to the side. Because unity of mind, unity with one another, trying to think and work and act together, it's something we really have to have. There has to be a partnership. There has to be both sides working towards that, right? I can't make you have unity with me, and you can't make me have unity with you, can we? We can't force other people in that. So that's kind of an us thing, but I want to focus on the things that are about me. And then he goes in next, is have sympathy. Okay? Finally, all of you have sympathy, brotherly love, a tender heart, and a humble mind. And so all of you have sympathy or understanding for others. That's kind of why I put this particular image. We may not always understand other people are going through stuff. We may not understand what they're going through, where they're kind of at, but we should all understand everybody's going through something. We may not know what it is. It may not be visible. They may just kind of be putting on a brave face, whatever it might be. We need to have some sympathy and understanding for people who are going through the stuff. And especially an understanding that I probably don't know, even if I know something about it, I probably don't know everything about it. Secondly, this idea of brotherly love. And this is where I really want to hit at the idea of tribalism. I think the world has shown us throughout time, all of human history, humans tend to divide up in their tribes, whatever their tribes are defined as. And it used to be that those were family-oriented. One family against another family, right? I mean, you can go back, I mean, famous feud in America, the Hatfields and McCoys, real families that hated each other, who went to church together, who hated each other, and who killed each other, and whose feud lasted generations. One of the things that I think Christians have often done, which I think is the same thing that the lawyer tried to do when Jesus told them the second commandment, the second most important thing was to love your neighbor as yourself. He's like, well, yeah, but who's my neighbor? So he was trying to define the person he had to love. And Jesus didn't define it the way he wanted. And I think a lot of us, and I've heard this, probably even thought it, you know, years ago, where you think, well, you know, my brother is those that I go to church with. Well, all that thinking that's us. That's just, I'm trying to define who I brotherly love. The truth is, all human beings are offspring of God. And every human being is my brother in the flesh. It may not mean my brother in Christ, but they are my brother of the flesh. We all came from the same man. And we like to divide ourselves up, you know, do our in and our who's in and who's out thing. But we need to, if we want to be godly, we need to stop that. And we need to love people and have sympathy and compassion and understanding with people, regardless of who they are. Now, does that especially apply to my brethren that I see every week? Yes. Galatians chapter 6 talks about that. Does that especially apply to the people in my home? Yes. And so it especially applies to those who are closest to me, so that we're not just really nice with that people outside, and then we go home and yell at everybody in our house and kick the dog. No, it needs to especially apply to those who are closest to us. To love our brethren. Compassion, which in ESV is translated a tender heart. Can we have compassion or empathy for other people? Some people are good at this, kind of maybe naturally good at it, and some people aren't really naturally good. But even if you're not naturally good at it, it doesn't let you off the hook. Try to have some understanding and sympathy and have some compassion for the fact that others are having a tough time. And then humble of mind. This last one in this group, I think is really important, because when we are thinking of ourselves as better than others, more important than others, then we don't practice this stuff very well. It's hard to be loving and kind and gentle and patient with people who might even be hating on us if we think we're better than them. This is where humbleness of mind is so important. I don't think any of these attributes are something we can do if we're not thinking others are just as good, just as important, just as important that God loves them as me. He desires all of them to be with him in eternity just like you and me. That we're no better than anyone else. Now, coming down a little bit, and I'm going to, he says, do not repay evil for evil or reviling for reviling, but on the contrary, bless. For to this you were called, that you may obtain a blessing. And he goes and he quotes a passage. I'm going to skip it, but he says, don't. This is another thing Mike and I were talking about. It's like when we were younger, neither one of us, you know, were Christians and didn't really work or didn't behave and act like it. You know, it's kind of like you treat others as you want to be treated. And so Mike and I were talking about how it's like, well, when we were younger, not Christians, it was like, well, if you're nice to me, I'll be nice to you. And if you're mean to me, I'm going to be mean to you, and I'm going to be mean more. You're not going to want to come at me and start fighting me, because I'm going to win. That was probably both of our mentalities when we were younger. And that's not godly. And we need to bless. We don't want to repay. We don't want vengeance. Let God take care of the vengeance. We need to bless. To bless doesn't mean to say a prayer. To bless means to say something good. That blessing is really simple. It means to say something good to somebody. If people are mean and harsh to you, find something good to say. And I'm not talking about lying, but find something good.
Oh, I like your shoes. You like that?
It might be that Paul did it in Greece when he was so disturbed by all of their idols. But he found one idol to an unknown god, and he said to them, I see that you're very religious people. They would have understood that. They would have kind of probably felt pretty good about that. Now, he tried to help them understand God better, but he understood that they wanted. And even when people are passionate about one thing or another, sometimes we can give them credit for being passionate and trying to do what's right and trying to do something good, even if they might be mistaken. And find the thing to talk about. I don't know how much shoes important there are, but if that's all you can find good for them, that might be unfortunate. But
sorry.
And finally, the last ones, and this comes, you know, jumping down a little ways, after he quotes passage from the Old Testament, he says, now who is there to harm you if you are zealous for what is good? But even if you should suffer for righteousness' sake, you will be blessed. Have no fear of them, nor be troubled, but in your hearts honor Christ the Lord as holy. Always being prepared to make a defense to anyone who asks you for a reason for the hope that is in you, yet do it with gentleness and respect. Here's that gentle thing again, but it's also respect. Asking everybody. In this particular context, it's people who don't even know why you have the hope you have. So that means they're not Christians. And he's talking about being respectful and gentle to people. And they may be asking why you have the hope you have, and they may not be asking in a nice way. But we can be gentle and respectful. Because that's what God has been with us. God has been patient and kind and generous and faithful for us, and he's asking us to do it for others. So we're going to end it there. Appreciate all of your time today, and I hope I didn't belabor that point too much. We're going to have a song to finish up and to sing this, finish up this section. So if you want to open your Bible or your songbooks to 417 or just watch it on the overhead, we're going to sing this just to close out. But it's just a reminder, if you have a need, if we can help you in some way, please let us know how. Sometimes we know there are people struggling, going through something, and hopefully we reach out in those cases. But sometimes people are going through things that we don't know about, and we can't know about, and we don't understand. And sometimes some of us are going through things that we can't even really express. I know that for myself. I mean, I'd like to explain to you my grief, you know, and like somebody texted me, Roxy texted me a week or two ago, how you doing? I said, okay. She said, oh, just okay. And I actually thought okay was pretty good. Because I got to tell you, the best I am any moment of any day is okay. Everything else is worse than that. So you know, and I don't know when that will ever change for me. Because I have a massive hole that is not there. And I don't know what it will ever, I don't know what will ever fill it. But, and I don't know how to explain it. So hopefully that helped a little bit. But sometimes, you know, all of us might be going through things others don't know. Just try to talk with somebody. And you can reach out to the elders, you know, grab somebody in the congregation, but talk with people if you can. So let's go ahead and stand and sing.